You are listening to Radicals in Conversation, a podcast from Pluto Press, with Chris Brown, Emily Orford, Luke Billingham, and Charlie Gilmore.
Okay, welcome everyone. It's the third Pluto Press podcast of our series. And around the table today, we've got Luke Billingham from Haven Distribution and Charlie Gilmore. We're going to have a discussion between Luke and Charlie tonight, which is going to be centering around prisons, what it's like to be in prison, what it's like to learn in prison, what it's like to read in prison, and Haven Distribution's services to prisons across the United Kingdom in providing books for prisoners for their education. And also Pluto Press's role with Haven Distribution as well. Okay, so guys, I'd like to introduce yourselves maybe a little bit.
Cool. So I'm Luke and I'm a trustee and volunteer at Haven Distribution. I've been involved with the charity for a couple of years, motivated initially by being appalled by the book ban and then been with them ever since. Motivated by understanding the importance of education and the role that self-education, especially in self-motivated education, can play in helping to change people's lives.
I'm Charlie, I'm a writer and journalist. The reason I've been asked here, I suppose, is because in 2011, I was given a 16-month prison sentence for violent disorder. And while I was there, discovered Haven Distribution and the joy of reading in prison.
Charlie, so tell us what it was like to be in prison and what the access was like towards books and education while you were there. How did you find it?
So when I was sentenced, I was initially sent to Wandsworth, which is the sort of classic Victorian high security prison. My cellmate used to put this sort of cardboard cover over the toilet, and it was really inconvenient. And he said, no, it's to stop the rats climbing out at night. And I sort of didn't believe him, so I sort of left it off and put a little bit of bread out. And in the morning, the bread was gone. So I think he was probably right. But being in prison is not a pleasant experience. It's not like Hollywood. I thought it would be sort of like the Hollywood films before I went in, because I stupidly stayed up watching Shawshank Redemption and Papillon the night before I was sentenced. So I was kind of terrified. But actually, it's more boring than it is violent. And so reading is an absolutely essential part of that, if you can read. I mean, 50% of prisoners are functionally illiterate, which is a massive consideration you have to make when thinking about how to support prisoners. Not everyone can get the same thing from books as the other 50%, I think.
Was there a library in Wandsworth that you could access?
Right, yeah, that's what I actually originally meant to talk about. So I was in Wandsworth for a month, and every other day I would ask a prison officer where the library was and how I got there, and they'll generally just get laughed at. One of them said, if you want to find the library, just go straight down the corridor, past the swimming pool, and it's on your left. So I think the attitude of some towards reading in prisons is that it's a sort of effeminate, affected, you know, spoilt thing that maybe prisoners shouldn't even be allowed to do.
So you couldn't access the books there?
I could have done.
You could have done.
But not within a month.
Okay. And so when did you first hear about Haven?
So I was absolutely thrilled to leave Wandsworth, because I was being sent to what I thought was going to be a gloriously cushy, lower security prison out in the countryside. And when I got there, there was no screen in front of the toilet in my cell. There was just a cellmate who had very bad diarrhea and would sort of sit there on the toilet smoking and kind of looking at me as he shat his guts out. It did have a library that I could access, but it only had Geoffrey Archer. And the books on prison law were locked in a very hard to access case. And then one day, a anti-fascist prisoner who was there for beating up someone who was dressed as a Nazi and shouting Heil Hitler, which I thought was a pretty righteous thing to get sent to prison for. He'd probably been given a medal rather than a 2 to 4 year prison sentence, whatever it was. And he introduced me to Haven Distribution. And I actually didn't order that much stuff, because I felt like it was a limited resource and I actually had loads of books. But I did order Fahrenheit 451 by Ray Bradbury, which is I guess it's kind of odd considering that not long after I was let out, books were banned in prison. It's a story about a sort of dystopian future within which books are banned and how awful that is. But it was, I thought it was a fantastic thing, and I passed on the catalogue to another prisoner, and I hope that he used it to order plenty of books. Mm-hmm. But books, for those who appreciate them, they are an incredible currency and an incredible way of bonding with other people inside. I stupidly packed lots of quite heavy literature, thinking, great, I'm going to get through Dostoevsky and all this like 16th century poetry. And that just wasn't ultimately what I wanted. I think actually Jeffrey Archer might have been.
Now you know why it was there in the first place.
So obviously you talked a little bit about the book ban that came into place. What was the timeline of events and kind of where are we now in relation to that?
So the book ban lasted, I think it was just around a year or a couple of years when Grayling was in the role. I think it was end of 2015, start of 2016, that it was lifted by Gove when he was briefly Minister for Justice. And the justification for it was a mixture of sort of security and punishment, just depending on who spoke. And famously, it cost them tens, if not hundreds of thousands of pounds on PR to justify it because it was clearly ludicrous. And there was also quite a lot of crap spoken about how easy it is for prisoners to access books. They don't need books to be sent in because they get the same library service as people on the outside and that sort of stuff. So it was a mixture of sort of rhetoric about security, rhetoric about sort of punishment and the fact that prisoners shouldn't have privileges, and then just sort of empirical falsity about like the free access to books that prisoners had already. The reality now, and what we continually hear from prisoners when they write to us, is that there are still many issues with getting hold of books. So there's a sort of dangerous simplistic narrative that before the book ban, prisoners could get access to whatever books they wanted. They were getting sent books all the time. Mm-hmm. Book ban came in, no books. And then after the book ban, they've got all the books that they want. In reality, obviously, the book ban relates to people on the outside sending books in. There is not a massive proportion of prisoners who would have people on the outside who'd be able and willing to send in books to them on a regular basis. Book access for prisoners remains largely from the prison library. Access to the library is very, very limited. The books that are in the library, as Charlie was mentioning, isn't necessarily a good variety. So especially if you're trying to pursue a particular course and you need particular literature for your course, that's very difficult if you're relying on very infrequent visits to the library. The prison rules state that you might have a minimum of half an hour every 2 weeks, which isn't very much. But again, in reality, often it's less than that because of officer shortages and so on. So for lots of reasons, especially relating to the quality of libraries, prisoners' access to books, and especially relevant books for the courses that they're studying, is limited. And dictionaries is a big issue. As Charlie mentioned, literacy levels on average in prisons tend to be quite low. We have a lot of requests for dictionaries to help those who are just beginning to learn to develop their literacy skills. And often in libraries, there'll only be a couple of dictionaries that'll be very tatty that you can't take out of the library that are reference only. So if you're trying to begin to learn to read and write and you want to do that in your cell, especially if you're banged up for sort of 20 plus hours a day potentially, if that dictionary is left in the library and you can only access it for half an hour every fortnight max, that very much limits what you can achieve.
So how many dictionaries do you think you send out every year?
Roughly half, if not maybe sort of 60-70% of what we send in is dictionaries of some description. So we send in quite a few like dictionary and thesauruses, but we also send in quite a few bilingual dictionaries. So that's probably about 1,000 dictionaries a year. The bulk of what we do is sending in like educational books to prisoners who are on a course. So any prisoner studying any sort of course, be it sort of functional skills or an academic course or a degree, a postgrad degree or vocational course, can fill out a quick form and then we send them the book that they need. The catalogues are sort of separate. So we've got one catalogue which is sort of general reading, which has some political books, some fiction, a mixture. So that might have been the one that you had. And then we've got a catalogue of Sage books, which is like academic books. And then we've got one which is books donated by Pluto Press and Verso and New Left Review. So that one and the general reading catalogue, they both have quite a few political books in.
Do you see yourself as having a political, I wouldn't say mission, but is there a political reason behind what you do at Haven?
Yeah, there's definitely a political side to what we do. The point that I made when I wrote something for Verso, if I'm allowed to mention them, was that one of the reasons that the book ban was so sort of almost universally decried was that wherever you sit on the political spectrum, you can very strongly justify prisoners having access to books and prisoners rehabilitating themselves through self-education. If you're like a Michael Gove, believing in the sort of civilizing role that education plays, you support the books in prison on principle. If you're an anarchist who fundamentally disagrees with the institution of prisons, then you believe that anything which can help any form of liberation is beneficial and worthwhile and should be encouraged, mm-hmm. books being one potential form of sort of partial mm-hmm. escapism. But as I say, in terms of support for what we do and sort of the campaign against the book ban, there are a wide range of sort of political perspectives mm-hmm. Represented.
And Charlie, do you see your role as a prisoner or an ex-prisoner as a political role at all?
So many of these people who are activists, or not activists, but like some of the, I think some of the best voices that we have on prison are ex-prisoners. There's a guy called Carl Catamol who's very funny and angry, who wrote HMP, A Survival Guide, about his 2 years inside. Former detainees are the best people to talk about the detention system. So I think having that experience cannot help but make you want to change that system for other people and possibly even destroy it. Not that I could lay any claim to having done anything at all that could even come close to approximating someone attempting to destroy the prison system, but my heart's there.
And it's interesting looking at the voices that are out there advocating for changes in prison conditions or prison reform, because again, they come from quite a wide variety of political perspectives, including the ex-prisoners who talk about these issues. When you see like the other sort of political things that they're involved in, there's a massive variety of different things, and it seems that if you experience it either directly through being inside, or you're an academic and you study it, or you're a campaigner involved in the Howard League or the Prison Reform Trust, and so you go in and see it, it's so obvious that the way that our prison system is set up and the way that our individual prisons are has to be changed, mm-hmm. and is, according to whatever criteria you use, be it rehabilitation, be it just keeping people safe, be it helping people to develop in a way that means that they're not going to cause harm afterwards, there are enormous fundamental flaws in the way that the prison system and individual prisons operate. So it's very political in some cases, it's very directly critical of the way that prisons are and linked to sort of prison abolitionism in some cases. In other cases, it might be quite conservative, quite right-wing people who just see that the basic fact of the way that prisoners are going to leave afterwards means that things have to be changed.
Well, Michael Gove was a good example of that, I guess. And actually, his potential prison reforms were probably the most progressive thing that he ever did, really.
Yeah, I trained as a teacher during the time that Gove was in education, and so he was like the devil. Yeah. It was like... Everyone who ever did any sort of talk would have like a crap joke about Gove being an arsehole at the end of it. It was like guaranteed laugh, guaranteed support. And then it was sort of soon after that, when I was involved in Haven, that he became Minister for Justice and he was involved in prison reform. And obviously at Haven, we're particularly interested in prison education. And he chatted about prison education a lot and made a lot of sort of positive noises about it. So I suddenly entered a realm where people were a bit like, he's actually all right, or at least like the ideas that he's putting forward about prison education are to be welcomed. Obviously, he didn't last that long. Obviously, there was severe limits to what he could do. And obviously, I don't agree with everything that he believes in, but in this particular instance, he at least valued education and saw that that could have play a role in helping to change lives.
Generally, prison isn't a hot political issue, though. It's not really something that...
It's not a vote winner. There's definitely a phrase about how it will only lose you votes rather than gaining votes, because whatever you say about prisons, unless you say something generic and crap like tough on crime and tough on the causes of crime, then it's not going to win you much.
Do either of you have a stance on prison abolition at all?
You began talking about it.
Yeah, I'm all for it, I have to say. I have no idea how it would be achieved, I suppose. We have to have a fairer society first, possibly, or perhaps we should destroy the prisons now and then build a fairer society in the rubble, or I'm not strictly sure. And then what do we do with the sex offenders? It's obviously, you know, that's a very thorny issue. My friend said that with the sex offenders, they shouldn't be confined. There should just be a place where they can go to seek refuge from the baying mobs that will be hunting them.
I was telling Emily earlier about Marge Pierce's book, Women on the Edge of Time, which is interesting because it is a society which she imagines or goes to, depending on how you read the text, but where there is no prison system. And in many respects, this is kind of a utopian sort of anarchic sort of society in many ways, but they just kill people who have... not on their first offence, but you know, if they are repeat offenders, if you will, you know, and they're a danger to the society. So they're kind of quite brutal.
It's interesting. I went to a talk by someone who lives in the ZAD, the Zone de Fondée, in France, which the police haven't been able to go in there for a few years. It's this autonomous region. He was saying, you know, is obviously difficult because we don't have a justice system, and there are these kind of repeat offenders. And they said there was this one guy who he just kept on setting fire to people's cars, and he just enjoyed doing it, and he did it, and eventually they had enough. And so they got him really drunk, stripped him naked, threw him in the back of a van. I was like, oh god, no, you threw him off a cliff. But actually they just drove him 300 miles away and just booted him out the back of the van. Sort of just like, you know, someone else's problem.
You can do that on a worldwide scale, because people would be shifting around just all over the place.
There is, I think, As a consequence, as we were saying about the fact that there isn't that much political imagination really addressing prisons, there aren't necessarily that many wide-ranging, interesting, creative ideas about alternatives to prisons. Having said that, that there are some interesting new ideas that have come from... There are architects who are looking at creative ways of... sort of incarcerating people, but in ways that don't separate them off from the community to such an extent.
Isn't there a prison that's already been built? The new prison, is it in North Wales? Yeah, Wrexham.
Oh no, the kids from the local primary school. It was called Wrexham, but then the primary school kids had a competition about who could name it. It's called...
Oh really? What, Berwyn?
It's called like Teddy Ware Binkle Winkle or something, or Berwyn. Yeah, that's it. and quite sick getting the primary school kids to name the prison.
I didn't realise they'd done that. But I think that is a very negative consequence of the fact that prisons and conditions in prisons and the general sort of question of what should be done with those who are currently held in prison doesn't get the same attention as, say, education or the NHS. These are all very important institutions. Obviously, the numbers involved differ, but they arguably perform similarly important functions, so they should get the same amount of intellectual attention and creative thought around how things could potentially be done differently.
Voting rights, is that for example?
Yeah, and again, there are some ex-prisoners, there are some campaigners who are very hot on the idea that that would be quite a fundamental thing in terms of prisoners' orientation towards society, involvement in society, being able to vote. And then others focus quite strictly on conditions and say that they don't want to talk about rights of... prisoners. They don't want to sort of politicise it in that way. They want to say that it's conditions which, by anyone's standards, are abominable and need to be addressed.
Charlie, you mentioned earlier that people who've actually come through the prison system, generally the best kind of people to talk about it, in terms of how it can be changed. I mean, Luke, have you found there are any examples that stick in your mind of people who've received kind of the literature that Haven provides that have then either been politicised or become vocal about?
There's definitely... The sort of the letters we get in response to the books that we've sent sort of vary greatly, and some of the ones that we sort of enjoy receiving most are ones where it's like two sentences from someone who sent a dictionary and it's clearly made a real difference. And there was one where the guy said that the first book he'd ever got was from us and he's now a peer mentor helping others to learn maths and like our book helped to start it. And there's loads of chat about qualifications that have been gained based on books that we sent. We've been invited to a degree graduation of someone at Full Sutton who used the books that we got to help him with that. But others do come from prisoners who've received books from our catalogue, which are a variety of different types of books, and some of those are political. And so we get sort of mini essays sometimes where mm-hmm. people have read The Shock Doctrine and then they found it really interesting and they tell us all about what they think it says about society and how interesting they found it. And there's a lot of interesting thoughts as well about how the content of particular books about wider society relate to their experience inside, and some interesting thoughts on potential similarities between the way that society is going and the way that it is to be inside.
So yeah, when we think about books in prison, I guess it's easy for a lot of people to think of prisoners just sort of lounging on their bed, kicking back with their shoes off, smoking some hash that's been smuggled in by a friendly prison officer and reading the latest anarchist newspaper. But actually, prison conditions in the last year, or really since 2010 when Osborne's cuts came in, and it's absolutely apocalyptic. Towards the end of last year, we had riots in Birmingham, which quickly went on to Bedford and Lewes. There have been around 25,000 assaults in prison in 2016, which is like obviously massively underreported, because you know I probably one in three assaults get reported, even the ones that prison officers see often aren't noted down. And of course suicides, it's in 2016 we had 120 suicides, and I think towards the beginning of this year it was one every 3 days.
Yeah, I heard that in 2014 there were more suicides in prison than there were executions in America.
God. So we are kind of killing our prisoners, but in a particularly cruel way, a sort of murder by neglect.
Yeah,
really, no, nothing. I mean, I remember there was one guy when I got sent to Wandsworth, and he was a schizophrenic, and he had said he was going to kill himself, and he should have been getting help. And he was on suicide watch, which means the lights are on 24 hours a day, and someone is meant to come and check on you every, I think it's half an hour or something like that. And the prison officer who was sat outside his cell on suicide watch had a newspaper tucked over his eyes and was snoring, blatantly just snoring while this guy was in there who had threatened to kill himself. So, you know, prison is not a nice reading holiday. And, you know, obviously there's only so much that books can do to assuage a lot of those problems. But I think, Luke, would you agree that it plays a small but important role in kind of alleviating some of these horrible conditions?
Yeah, of course. And I think anyone who has any involvement in anything to do with prisons in the UK over the past sort of 5 to 10 years basically feels that we're really at crisis point. The riots, the suicides, the staff shortages, drugs like spice causing massive problems. There are prisons where it's reported that inmates having to protect guards. There was a report about Felton recently, which is a young offenders institution, about how it's safe neither for inmates nor staff. So it really is reaching breaking point. And it's not just a matter of more staff. It's not just a matter of certain prisons being closed down. There are fundamental problems with the system and the way that prisons are that which need to be addressed. And so from our perspective at Haven, thinking about this, what we mention is just the relatively small but very significant impact that books can have in this context. The worse that the prison crisis gets, the longer prisoners are going to be banged up for. So we got a letter from Prentonville just the other day from a prisoner saying he's banged up 23 hours a day, 23 hours a day inside his cell.
A cell which is essentially a toilet with a bed in.
A toilet with a bed in.
Plus rats.
And so in order for him to self-educate, to engage in anything productive at all, is utterly vital for him to have books, interesting books. And in his case, it's I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's a particular academic interest that he's got that he wants to pursue. Mm-hmm. And being able to pursue that when in your cell for 23 hours a day, rather than not having that, makes an enormous difference. And what is incredibly important to remember is that 95% of people who go into prisons will come out of them at some point. So it is important to think of prisoners as your potential neighbour. In a few years, they could move in next to you. And when you think about it in that sense, then you realise that having them in an underfunded, understaffed, potentially violent, potentially dangerous, potentially drug-ridden place for however long their sentence is, and then to move in next to you, the alternative of them having opportunities for education, opportunities to pursue hope, pursue purposes which then may lead to opportunities on release, is of benefit to absolutely everybody in the society. We talk a bit, when we're feeling a little bit sort of theoretical or a little bit pretentious, we talk about books as tools and windows. Lots of prisoners are pursuing purposeful activity inside, especially educational courses. Often they face massive difficulties getting hold of the tools that they need for what they're doing, especially obviously course books and dictionaries in the case of those who are developing their literacy. So getting the book from us for them to own, that's their book that they can access whenever they want it, rather than having to rely on infrequent library visits, can make a massive difference to them pursuing that course or that qualification that they're going for. And then the windows side of it is thinking about how there's lots and lots and lots of nagging, gnawing boredom that can affect you inside. And then there's also a fair amount of terror, depending on what's happening in the particular prison that you're in. In both of those cases, being able to absorb yourself in reading something can be a small amount of escapism. And when we hear from prisoners in letters, there's a mixture of those two things. There's plenty of prisoners telling us in very concrete terms about the way in which the book has helped them with a particular qualification. And then there's many who tell us about how, there was one recently about how he'd recently gone to the dentist, the treatment wasn't very good, he was in a lot of pain, the prison is just banning cigarettes, and so he's really, really struggling to cope with having to have the withdrawal symptoms. And so the books are really what are keeping him going. And all of those sorts of issues which can affect people on the outside, obviously they're greatly exacerbated on the inside. So the role that books can play as windows, as distractions, as escapism is massively important. And the worse the prison crisis gets, the worse the prisons get, the more important that small little contribution to a little slice of liberty or a little slice of humanity will get.
I mean, even the way prisons, at least the Victorian ones, are designed architecturally, they're designed to be inward looking. So it is a world where you can get very, very caught up in the minute, pointless, aggravating details. And I was only inside 4 months, and I was in a very fortunate position to have dozens of people writing to me. But even for me, being in that very, very fortunate position, I think if I didn't have the books that I had, the other side of the books, prisoners seek escape in one form or the other. And the other side is that last year, 200 kilograms of drugs were smuggled into prisons. And even I, you know, did get kind of sucked into that slightly. And if I didn't have the books, I think I'd have been sucked into that much more. I mean, it's very, very easy. In Wandsworth, all you have to do to get high is basically go out into the corridor and inhale. So I think it's absolutely, for those who are lucky enough to be able to read, I think it's absolutely a vital window out into the... It's weird thinking of books as a window out into the real world, but into a sort of larger, more meaningful, more spiritually enriching world.
So, Luke, I mean, obviously, you've explained a little bit about what Haven does now, and for the both of you, you've talked about the importance of the books and the importance of the work that you do. Is there any scope for broadening what Haven does? Or if money was no barrier, is there a sort of sense of what Haven would do?
It's important to mention that Haven's entirely volunteer run. There's a handful of us involved in it in our spare time. And we have now got up to sending out around 2,000 plus books a year. So obviously we're operating with sort of limited capacity and limited funds as well, and sending books all around the country isn't particularly cheap. But if, you know, if we did have massively increased capacity, then the priority would be sending in lots of books for those who lack literacy skills and really need to develop that. And there's a brilliant charity called Shannon Trust, which trains peer mentors in prison to teach others to read. And if we could, you know, supply them with infinite books, that'd be brilliant. If we could work a lot with ex-offenders who've come out and who could tutor others who've come out with less literacy skills, there's because of the state of our prisons, there's enormous need for lots of different sort of educational initiatives. Our priority at the moment is trying to deal with the demand that there is for our books because of the lack of access to books or the books that are needed inside. The demand that we face is massive.
Out of interest, what does happen if someone requests something and you can't fulfill? Do you always fulfill a request, or do you have to sort of sometimes let people down, or do you prioritize people with educational needs over people who want fiction?
So the dictionaries are quite simple. So in general, we get asked for, if the person's a native English speaker, we get asked for dictionary thesauruses, which are particularly useful if you're doing like a functional skills course. And so you're just beginning to learn to read and write and you want to develop that. So we get loads of requests of those, and they're very easy for us to fulfill quickly. We do have to put a limit on the price of the books that we send in so that we can benefit as many prisoners as possible. So we can only send in books up to 20 quid per calendar year. So often that might be a dictionary thesaurus, which would be like a tenner, and then one other book. And again, obviously, if we had much more resource, then we would massively expand that. And then the other thing that happens is that, brilliantly, catalogues get passed around the wings a lot. Sometimes we only have one or two copies of the books in the catalogues. So if it's gone around a wing for sort of a year, a prisoner might then ask for a particular book, which we sent to another guy on the wing sort of 6 months ago. But we always ask prisoners to send us like five choices so that we can send at least one or two. And something that's worked really well recently with Pluto was that a prisoner wrote to us describing the course that he was doing. I think it was social theory and French in Pentonville. And he basically just copied out his reading list in this letter, the books that most benefit his course. And I noticed when we was Pluto, and we've got this relationship with Pluto, so rather than having to look it up and check the cost and check if he'd got a book from us before, just wrote to one of the people at Pluto, and then they said it was print on demand and got it sorted for him. So he got the exact book about Pierre Bourdieu that he needed.
Yeah, we've been working with Haven for 2 years now, and we've donated a few books. And we've managed to make a catalogue out of the books that us and Verso have donated over the last couple of years, which is really fantastic. And we're going to continue to work with you for as long as we possibly can. So
yeah, and the catalogue's grown and grown thanks to the donations from you guys at Pluto and from Verso and others. And what you see when we get orders for the books from the Pluto or Verso catalogue, or when we get correspondence from prisoners in general, is the extent of the diversity in prisons. It's very important to reiterate that half of prisoners are functionally illiterate. They're very, very low levels of literacy. And that's important in terms of thinking about why those people have ended up in prison. Failures of education system, alternative provision, people referral units, secure training centres, secure children's homes, all of those institutions have a big part to play in why those people end up in prison. But then there are prisoners who are studying French and social theory. There are prisoners who take a massive interest in Russian history. And so the more books that we're able to get into our catalogue, the more sort of tastes and interests we're able to cater to. And that's what we see. If you're asking for books inside, you're pursuing self-education, which is the most transformative form of education that there is. If you've taken a particular intellectual interest in something that you want to pursue because you're interested in it, because you think it might be able to benefit your career, or it's just something that you think you're passionate about and will benefit your mind, that can be a fundamentally transformative thing for anybody. But if you're inside, if you're banged up for 23 hours a day, then being able to get that
can make a huge difference. And that's something which we're able to do thanks to publishers like Pluto and Verso sending us the books that they do and expanding our catalogue. It's up to 20 pages at the moment. We're now going to wait until some of the books have gone before adding in the new ones. Otherwise, it'll be...
I think we've probably got about 1,000 spare communist manifestos upstairs.
Yeah, taking my inbox.
I think that's on a couple of our catalogues.
So. Quite nice to think they're infiltrating the prison system with communist manifestos.
Certainly, yeah.
But I think the like last thought would be that prisons need more attention. And because of issues with drugs, because of issues with riots and suicides, they've begun to get more attention. But the fear is that the news cycle will move on, and even if things continue as they are or get worse, the attention that they're given will diminish. And anyone can make a mistake and end up in prison. And everyone in prison has however many loved ones on the outside who are thinking about them. Enormous numbers of people are affected by the horrific state that prisons are in. So it needs more attention. As I've mentioned before, I think books play a role in helping prisoners to cope and to advance themselves and to pursue purposes while they're inside. They make that small contribution, which obviously I think is very important. But the work of organisations like Prison Reform Trust and Howard League is also really important. And anyone who's at all political and at all concerned about human beings should pay some attention to this issue and think about how they might be able to contribute.
I think as important as prisoners reading is people reading about prisons. If you're at all interested in it, you should educate yourself about it. Even start writing to a prisoner, you'll find it to be an incredibly enriching and interesting experience. That could be the foundation stone from which people could start thinking about what they can do to change the system, would be actually communicating with the people who are inside it.
You've been listening to Radicals in Conversation, a podcast from Pluto Press. We'd like to thank our guests, Charlie Gilmore and Luke Billingham from Haven Distribution. You can find out more about the important work Haven does at havendistribution.org.uk. To listen to the next episode of Radicals in Conversation, go to plutobooks.com or subscribe via iTunes.